friends, welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hello.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb. Let's talk about, because I know you have opinions on this, let's talk about some of the worst comic book movie adaptations. And I'm going to insert a challenge here. You cannot mention Halle Berry or Catwoman.
Oh, I think
we've mentioned.
We've done this before.
We've mentioned that one.
We have.
But Cole brought this up recently on our Facebook group because there were some other examples that you wanted to talk about.
Well, I guess there was a listicle that I plopped on there, and it did not have many, but it had more than I realized. And some of them that I was like, oh, wow, you consider that to be a bad film? And, oh, no, that's most definitely a bad film. But there were 15 on that list, and, you know, they didn't have things like Supergirl.
No.
But they had stuff like, the Halle Berry film, which shall not be named. But you know what? There was a majority of films on this list I have not seen, and that was kind of frightening. Like, I have never seen Frank Miller's Spirit film.
Oh, you shouldn't.
And that's what everyone has said to me. It's like, no, this Cole, there's nothing redeeming about it. And I'm like, well, really, that's the way I feel about Howard the Duck, you know.
If that movie had been Frank Miller doing something else without the word "the spirit" attached, I could have almost have found a way to not hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it was just like, well, you took one thing that was specifically one man's thing, Will Eisner's The Spirit, and you turned it into Frank Miller's Sin City, because that's all it is. It's more Sin City, but not as good as the first Sin City, because that had Robert Rodriguez.
Well, what I don't understand is that where that film is concerned is that Frank Miller has always worshipped Will Eisner, and out of all of the influences that Miller will not cop to, he will at least pay deference to Will Eisner. And so my understanding was going into this film that this is going to be a tribute to this man's work, and it did the exact opposite. You know, that's what I don't... And I still have never seen this film, and I probably never will.
Don't pay for it.
Yeah.
So was it basically Spirit in name only?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened with the movie we're not going to name. And also...
yeah, actually.
One of my favorite zombie books, World War Z, had a movie adaptation.
Oh, yeah.
And it was basically not the book.
It was Brad Pitt's
zombie movie.
What did you think of World War Z, though?
The movie?
Yeah.
It was a great zombie movie.
I enjoyed the movie, and I enjoyed the book.
It wasn't the book I read,
but it was a
decent zombie movie.
I loved the book, and I really enjoyed the movie. So.
But two separate beasts, completely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The other ones, you know, and then there were like Shaquille O'Neal's Steel, which was just,
I haven't heard of this one.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of want to watch that, though, because I just hadn't heard about it until we started talking about it.
It's just dreary.
It's forgettable.
Boring and infinitely forgettable. And it was just a vehicle for Shaquille O'Neal. And there were a ton of films that they made for that guy. And they all, Kazam? Wasn't that one of them,
too? Yeah, it was
like a genie or something.
He was a genie.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, he was a genie. he has no charisma, performative stage charisma, film charisma, whatever. He's just dead on screen.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, you know, Steel was a third tier DC superhero that they introduced following the death of Superman, who was interesting in his own right. But after Kal-El returned from the grave, you know, those characters all went thither and yon and really never blossomed into anything. And Steel is still around as a superhero, but he's just never actualized his potential. And this film didn't help that.
No. Well, they removed all the context, too, to why he became Steel. And I actually really liked why he became Steel.
I do, too. Yeah.
So,
John Henry Irons, you know, this hammer killed John Henry, the old folk hero. And it was kind of rewriting that mythology in this metal-clad, high-tech superhero who carried a big hammer. And he was pretty cool. And that's not what the film is about. The film doesn't know what it's about.
That actually brings up a question. As a retailer, you guys, when a movie like Steel comes out and is terrible, does that...
It doesn't hurt us.
Yeah.
We didn't invest in it.
Well, no, but do people stop buying Steel comics?
when Shaquille O'Neal.
I think in that regard,
terrible.
It probably doesn't affect it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even think there was a comic book to tie in with the film at the time.
I
think he was in the Justice League, but I don't think he had it. He may have had a solo comic, but it was flagging. As
he had a solo one. I just don't know what the time periods line up as. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there have been, I just didn't realize how many very poor comic book film adaptations there were up until recently. I don't care for the X-Men movies, but, you know, a lot of people do. I don't care for the Wolverine movies, but a lot of people do. But the one that I don't remember hating so much was the live Spawn film. But, you know, and in retrospect, it's really awful.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember it being tolerable when
John
I saw
Leguizamo
it.
John Leguizamo and...
Wesley Snipes?
Was no.
He no. No, no. That would have helped.
Oh,
that
who was the actor? Blade.
Well, the voice...
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh no. Wait. The voice. I keep the cartoon was much better because the voice with Keith was Keith David.
Oh, Keith David.
Yeah. I can't remember who the actor was for Spawn. He's forgotten.
If you know, email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com.
I saw that movie around what Northerners refer to as middle school because I was living in the South at the time.
Mm-hmm. I went to middle school,
and so I feel like it was perfect for that time period in my life. But I don't know that I've ever gone back, and if I have, it was
really
forgettable.
Yeah.
Like, never see The Crow ever, unless you live in the 90s. Like, seriously,
are you talking about Brandon Lee's
bad.
The Crow?
It's one of my favorite movies.
I love The Crow, but I rewatched it, and it's like really, it does not age well.
I haven't seen it
I
in about
it
10
like
years.
10 years ago, and I really enjoyed it still.
Well,
so.
I saw it in the theater. I remember liking it. Of course, I was
10 years ago was closer
the
to the 90s.
Are you sure you didn't watch the sequel? Is Crow City of Angels?
Or the third sequel?
Yeah,
or the
just,
fourth
I
sequel.
I just realized there was more after two. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. Didn't stop. They did not stop.
Oh, Michael Jai White was Spawn.
Yeah.
And Martin Sheen's in it, too.
Yeah,
back to the Spawn movie. Yeah.
Anyway,
but the you know, the absolute worst were probably the Schumacher Batman movies that just
I still haven't seen the last one.
Oh man.
You know, and somebody presented me with an almost acceptable defense, which was they reminded him of the 60s comics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know what? If there was a big old caption at the start of the movie of Schumacher being like, "Hey everybody, I don't know what anything is after the 60s." I'm doing this. Then it would have been like, all right, okay, I get what you're doing. I understand why you're doing this.
Forget everything Tim Burton ever showed you.
Right. Yeah. It's just he didn't understand what he was doing.
No, and you know? and to take such a radical shift from the vision that of reality that Tim Burton had established in the first two films and very successfully, you know, I was totally confused by the Schumacher films, absolutely confused by them, because there has always been an aspect of homoerotica to the Batman stories and the Batman and Robin relationship.
But then they put nipples on the armor and made it really real.
Just,
they had some weird Alfred stuff in the last one, too, that was just kind of like,
there was the Batgirl business that was just, all this weird family dynamic that was just really, really confusing. The first Schumacher film was Batman Forever, right?
With the Riddler
and Two-Face,
right?
And I was okay with that. I was okay with it. No, I really was. I was okay with.
Well, the bright colors distracted us.
Yeah.
And I mean,
rusted metal Batman. I mean,
I was disappointed that Billy Dee Williams didn't play Two-Face.
Yeah.
Because he was Harvey Dent in the Tim Burton movies.
That would have been really interesting because how do you make an African-American man two-faced? Do you give him a white face? Because that's what I was wondering.
Would have been groundbreaking, whatever
that
is.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, that would have been
risky. We didn't get that. We got Mondo Bizarro.
I like Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, he was. Everybody was over the top. And that's why I could, you know, partially digest Batman and Robin, because to me that whole film was one big rave full of a lot of people doing a lot of different kinds of drag.
I gotta rewatch it with that context.
It's all one big rave party with the glow, the day glow, and the lights and the garish costume, but everybody is dragging something. Arnie's dragging himself. You know, he's totally satirizing himself in the whole, and you know, and that's how I got through the movie.
The thing about those two that I don't want to say redeem them, but
you can say that. It's
no,
it's okay.
But no,
we're not at redemption yet.
It's the city design work that you only get to see glimpses of, but they have like these huge like statues as part of the buildings and all that. Like it's actually like a really cool vision of a different kind of Gotham.
Right.
So like every time you don't have to listen to anybody act and you get into the car chases, you're like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know.
But I think what's frustrating with comic book movies is how a franchise starts and is full of promise and verve and vigor and then just totally implodes. Same thing with the Christopher Reeve Superman films. The first two are marvelous. And if you know the story behind those first two films, it's really strange and convoluted, the fact that they were supposed to be one film. If you've ever seen the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, they shot both those films together. They were supposed to be one film.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Go watch the Richard Donner cut. It's really amazing. They cobbled together his original storyline and sometimes using screen test footage just to flesh out the story.
I take it that's not an official release I can get on Netflix.
Yeah, it is.
It is?
Yeah, yeah, it is. It came out about 10 years ago.
That's awesome.
Never heard of it? Yeah.
Now we know what you're going to watch here.
Because it's going home right now.
It's absolutely fascinating. See you, Ben. Wait, you gotta break all the down.
Sorry, I gotta push word. Buttons.
You gotta break all this stuff down. You're gonna need to beat me now.
All right, that's a demerit for Colt for swearing on the podcast.
That's the first one I've gotten in 58 episodes. That's not too shabby.
Hit the dump button.
But you know, the Superman franchise just went down the crapper. The Spider-Man franchise went down the crapper.
It's interesting that there are so many.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles went down the crapper.
Like those are
He-Man went down the crapper.
We only have one He-Man movie.
When it went down the crapper.
When a movie adaptation comes out, of a book of a like a known quantity, many times a lot of people cannot agree on whether or not it's good. People like it, some people don't. Comic book movies sometimes are almost universally derived, and I think that's because when you make a movie adaptation of a comic book, the visual aesthetic has already been established. Mm-hmm. So instead of like, oh, that's not what I imagined the lady from Game of Thrones to look like,
you know
what that person is supposed to look like in the comics.
Which is when it's in that light, it's really foolhardy when they don't stick to the source material.
Well, and that's why people get like super picky about things like Apocalypse being shown and why I still think that there was actually like this weird trolling element, because like they changed the color scheme and it's like, well, now it looks a little bit better, but why would you show us the worst version first? Did you not recognize it was the worst version first? Wouldn't you want to get us eager to see this? I don't know. So
well, I just the Fox Sony studios have their heads in the wrong dark places. That's my take on it.
Dark night. Yeah. Okay.
It's not that hard to make an apocalypse, guys. Cosplayers do it all the time. Just do it. Just do it right.
All right. So, I'm sure that we will be talking about bad movie adaptations again soon enough.
Especially
after
when
all, Batman v Superman is coming out soon.
Well, and the X-Men movie looks like a fan-made film on YouTube, is what it looks like to me.
The new X-Men movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Apocalypse one. I'm not really looking forward to it.
All right. Well,
so stay tuned for that.
You're going to see it anyway? You're going to just
eventually, just like all the DC stuff. Maybe I'll eventually watch it. Maybe someone will coerce me to go or something. Yeah.
Cool. And here we are back in another hybrid episode. Welcome back to the Stumblebound Modcast, which is what Cole's been calling it. Maybe we'll come up with another name for it.
I think that's just fine.
I don't know what a modcast means, though. It sounds too much like the Kevin Smith's Modcast, though. That's kind of what I associate it with. Anyway,
what
we're
do you expect
here
for off the cuff and on the fly.
Chris and Cole and I are here. We've almost polished off two cases of beer and some airplane bottles
two
of whiskey.
Packs. It's not two a case.
Mark,
whatever. I never really. I gotta tell you, for all of my drinking days, I never really learned what the terminology was in terms of racks, half racks, cases. What is a case? Cases 12 bottles, 24. Cases 24
six pack
units.
Six pack is six.
Obviously,
no.
12
no,
pack
I,
is 12.
I apologize. You're right. I think a case is 12.
A case is 12. So what's a half rack? Is that half? So what's a rack?
I think that's just a Wisconsin version of
Wisconsin
24. Yeah.
All
because
right.
I did not hear the term half rack until I went to Wisconsin.
Anyway, Wisconsin, thank
the
you.
Night,
71 out of 72 counties for
is.
Bernie Sanders. We're gonna go to.
Random things people forget about, and this is probably just like oddities and comics Chris that people just kind of forget you. That had happened. So Chris, lead us in this discussion. What are some random things that people have forgotten about?
No, I was when I was trying to figure out different things to talk about while we were drinking, I was just like, you know, there's some
in relation to comics.
Yes, in relation to comics, there's a lot of like weird stories and subplots that most people are just like, meh, that happened, and they forget about it. And there's a couple that are like really interesting to me.
So essentially, Chris, you don't want to let people live in peace.
No,
is that
exactly.
what you're saying?
Exactly.
You're about to keep dredging up the crap.
Yes. I
All right,
love
keep
dredging
going.
Up the crap.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
So there were a couple others, and I'm going to skip the first one on the list because it actually doesn't last too long.
Okay.
Maybe we'll come back to it. But there was a Batman story where he was fighting a couple of assassins. Mm-hmm. And I forget their name. A Gunhawk, I'm pretty sure, is one of them. Which, you know, this,
well,
is
this another 90s
it's
story.
It's the 90s. Yeah, I think Chuck Dixon wrote it. And basically, Batman was dealing with this Punisher.
Isn't Dixon endorsing Trump, isn't that?
Oh, really?
Oh, no. I'm just being an ass. Oh. I'm sorry. Keep going.
But, and so there was this assassin named Gunhawk, and Batman was, you know, dealing with him for a couple issues. And at some point, Batman needed to prevent Gunhawk from assassinating somebody. And the thing is, Gunhawk was on the ferry with the target and was going to kill the guy. And the only way Batman could save the guy was by using a sniper rifle. And the thing is, Batman has a strict code
right.
against using guns.
Sure.
So he made a shot that was, by all accounts, an impossible shot because he's Batman.
From the grassy knoll.
Yeah. Magic bullet time. And he shot the gun out of Gunhawk's hand, and he saved the man's life. And so the thing is, Batman likes trophies. He has in the Batcave robotic T-Rex, the giant penny, and all that stuff. And he always
adds
stuff.
Big Joker card.
Yep. And so he had the gun where he made the most impossible shot in the world. And instead of putting it on display, because Batman hates guns, he threw it into the caverns of the Batcave.
Mm.
And I thought, like, that's one of the most...
The bowels of the Batcave.
Yeah. And I thought that was awesome, especially in light of the new Batman versus Superman movie where, like, he apparently... loves guns a lot, and he mounts them into his car and kills people left and right.
Well, that was established in the Burton films,
sure.
Though, too. So,
but the interesting thing too is that a lot of stuff gets thrown into the bowels of the Batcave because there was a crossover with Dark Horse where Batman fought the aliens from Alien,
right?
And at some point, he
Batman
had
Batman versus Alien.
Oh, yep. I actually remember that fondly.
Well, Bernie Wrightson drew the first one.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
think. Yeah.
Was it only the first one? He didn't draw the whole series.
Oh, I can't remember the second
okay,
one.
Okay, keep going.
But yeah, at the end of it, like Batman had a dead face hugger, and instead of putting it on display, he threw it into like the cavern of the Batman.
Well, yeah, because you know, in the continuity of the Batman stories, how the hell is he going to explain having a face hugger,
yeah.
you know, in his display case?
We'll get sued.
Know. Yeah, yeah. We have a special contract to tell this four-part, you know, miniseries. Sorry,
yeah.
I...
Oh, yeah,
I,
no. Makes just, perfect sense.
I'm peeing on your parade.
No,
I apologize.
No, no, but what I always love is the idea that there's, like, just a crap ton of... In the Batcave.
There must be some amazing things
yeah,
down in the bowels.
That's just thrown
of the
over
cave.
The bowels yeah. where Batman's just like, meh, I don't want to I don't want to remember this thing.
You know, Ben, I think we should do a panel jumper just on all the crap in the bowels of the Batcave.
This is interesting, though. I didn't realize there were so many. I didn't realize Batman was such a litter bug.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, but he's also kind of obsessive about stuff
oh,
that he collects.
Because yeah. there's a story during, there was a crossover or an event called Cataclysm where there was an earthquake that destroyed Gotham
right.
and the cave got hit pretty bad, and at some point the giant penny in the cave fell into the deep cavern
mm-hmm.
and Batman's like no, I gotta get that penny back, so he got Aquaman to help him get the penny from like the underwater cavern.
Nice.
And the thing is, Aquaman after that was just like, you know, Bruce, if you really just want to talk to somebody you don't have to make this intricate excuse to call me over. And Batman's like, fine.
Wow.
Yeah,
no,
it was fun.
Totally
I think Devin
that.
Grayson may have wrote that.
There's a show called Hoarders.
Oh,
Batman yeah. sounds like a very high maintenance friend.
Oh,
well,
seriously.
Mm, when he has his moments of vulnerability, I'm sure he is. I mean, I wouldn't want to be pals.
I
want
to get back to this dump that he's got in the Batcave. Yeah. What else is down there?
Lord only knows.
Because has so much space to display.
I didn't realize that he was a collector. Yeah. Though. I didn't realize he like. So I've been watching Dexter on Netflix, starring Michael C. Hall, and he's got a trophy case. It's a sample of blood on a slide of all of his kills.
Sure.
So Batman's got the giant penny, and he's got the Joker card, and he's got apparently facehugger, which
robot T-Rex.
Robot T-Rex. So what's the robot T-Rex?
Well, these all goes back to the Golden Age stories, right? Silver Age stories.
Transformers.
No. They're all
Grimlock.
Batman versus Grimlock.
Yes. They all relate to
Batman wins. But yeah,
do they not all relate? Well, also bear in mind that Superman's got his Fortress of Solitude in the North Pole, where he's got a whole zoo of exotic creatures from across the universe.
He does?
Yeah.
That's the thing about superheroes.
There are, he's got the last vestiges of extinct species at the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah.
That's one of the cool things about his Fortress of Solitude is all the critters he's got up there.
Superman's arc. I want to do a fake hoarders episode about all the trophies that these superheroes collect.
I think we're onto something here, buddy. I think we're onto something. Well, who else keeps keepsakes the way Batman and Superman do?
Well, the Justice Society has a museum that's maintained by Ma Hunkel.
Right. And the Flash has.
Yeah, he has the Flash Museum.
The Flash Museum in Keystone City, right?
Or Central City. I get those confused.
Uh-huh.
But whatever. But yeah. So like museums and there's a in Grant Morrison's Justice League, in their headquarters, they have a little trophy area, and they had a member who was an angel named Zariel.
Right.
And he is like fastidious about maintaining their trophy room. So like there's this fun idea that these heroes just keep all this stuff around.
Right.
And it's just like, we don't want to remember our fun adventures, because they were fun.
And then there's like Legion of Superheroes that just keep statues of all their deceased members.
Yeah. That's not morbid at all.
Are these trophies and statues and memorabilia, for lack of a better word, ever revisited in later episodes of
absolutely.
Do we see them in the background? Do we reference them?
I don't think it happens it does not happen in the Marvel universe.
Spider-Man has a small apartment.
It's like the Baxter Building. The Fantastic Four could have their own museum, but they don't keep it.
They don't. The only thing they kept was at some point apparently Reed Richards shrunk down Fin Fang Foom and turned him into the Chinese chef at the Baxter Building. So they collect supervillains.
Silliness.
Yeah.
But here's the point. Here's the thing is that it goes back to permanence in these respective universes, right? There's
the
permanence.
Continuity,
Well, but it speaks to permanence. But think about how many times the Baxter Building gets blown up in a year.
Yeah.
And how many times does the Avengers Mansion get blown up in a year?
Every 2 days.
And how many times does the X-Men Mansion on Grey Malkin Lane get blown up in a year?
Every 5 minutes.
No, this is interesting. I'm discovering this as I'm drunkenly espousing this, is that there's no permanence in the Marvel Universe.
No, yeah. DC has that legacy concept. Yep.
Ooh,
look at that.
So if you're just tuning in, we've discovered that DC has legacy on their side, and you should listen to
Great
this episode
day in the morning
when we talk about how to sustain DC as a viable ongoing entity. Going back to these trophies, it just fascinates me that all these superheroes collect mementos from their battles. What other superheroes do this?
Let's see here.
Like, does the Hulk or any one of the Avengers do they have trophy cases? Iron Man seems like he would have a trophy case.
I don't know. He's too drunk. He just takes a shot every time he beats somebody.
All right, so he's got a liquor cabinet.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, no. Batman, Superman kind of has minor trophies, but not much. The X-Men don't collect much stuff.
So it's mostly DC superheroes who have these?
It really is.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to Legion of Superheroes. And their original clubhouse was a rocket ship that was crashed into the ground.
Right.
So there was this artifact aspect of how they kept their community.
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
There's this aspect of...
Dude, just flip the switch on the dial, man.
There's this aspect of characters wanting to remember their adventures.
Yeah.
And that's more relevant across Silver Age DC. Blur. Sorry.
Blurk.
Too many beers.
Blurk.
But Marvel superheroes are so caught up in their angst. It's not like the Punisher wants to remember everybody he's murdered because he's too busy murdering everybody. and Daredevil can't see anything that he has, you know. Right. And the X-Men are too busy with all their clones.
I think this is really significant. I've never thought of this before. Yeah. Is that Marvel does not have that aspect of legacy, and they don't hold on to their history that way. Yeah. And now, thanks to Warner's attempts at reworking the DC universe, they're trying to purge all sense of legacy and let go of all those things. So the quaint image of Batman's, you know, trophy cases and Superman's zoo, his menagerie, and all of his stuff in his Fortress of Solitude, that's actually offensive to the world vision that they're trying to depict.
Right, right, yeah.
Oh.
It's interesting.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I think good subject, Chris.
I think we've made a breakthrough here.
Can we all hold hands and sing Kumbaya?
No, I don't want to touch you. Anyway. Yeah.
So what did we have next?
So let's briefly touch
the core of the table over here.
Oh, yeah. Let's briefly touch on Darkseid, and then we'll move on. So tell me about Darkseid. Tell me about Darkseid's secret.
So there was a really interesting story that was snuck between a larger event, and there was a DC event called Our Worlds at War, where
many events.
Yeah. They created a Galactus-type Kirby-style villain named Imperiex, and he was going around blowing up planets. And so all the heroes and villains and other aliens had to fight him off. Mm-hmm. And at some point, Darkseid and the planet Apocalypse joined Earth to help destroy this villain. And Darkseid, who had a history with Wonder Woman because he came and killed a bunch of her sisters, he decided to like cut a deal, like, hey, I'll help you fight this big villain called Imperiex, and we'll deal with stuff, you know. And at the end of it, Wonder Woman and Darkseid kind of had like a Vulcan mind meld. And Darkseid at the end was just like, ha, there's a piece of you, or there's a piece of me inside of your mind because I'm the dark side. And that's an old Kirby idea. The dark side is an element in all of us. And Wonder Woman's just like, well, yeah, screw you. There's a part of my soul inside of you, too. And Darkseid was like, oh, poop. Because Wonder Woman is about compassion and justice. And Darkseid's like, I didn't think this through, yo. And so I always thought that was a cool part. Yeah, that there's this element of Darkseid that's actually tainted with the goodness of Wonder Woman. And basically every writer forgot about that.
So it doesn't really affect his character then.
At all. And Wonder Woman.
But it's a cool concept though.
I liked it because it basically gave you this little in that there's maybe a small part of the fraction of Darkseid's soul. And Darkseid is like the god of evil that has a little bit of Wonder Woman in him. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, shh, poop. I am not as evil as I thought.
You really
I was.
Said poop.
Shh, poop.
Shpoop.
It's shpoopy.
Anyway,
anyway.
So cool. So Darkseid has a bit of a, so for listeners out there, if you ever read any Darkseid comics, just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
He's got a bit of Wonder Woman.
Not in the new 52.
Okay. I'm going to spring this again on you. Do either of you have any books you want to recommend or review this week? Chris is looking around. While you guys are thinking about it, I am actually going to mention that I completed Letter 44, which is this title. Yay. That I've already reviewed the first trade probably last year sometime, but I read the final two trades, and there's the third trade is actually coming out. Or, I mean, the fourth trade is not coming out for like another year, I think. Huh. And I'm a bit disappointed because unlike other comics where the trades manage one narrative arc, this is all entirely one narrative arc. Mm. It's one story. And so it just keeps going and going and going. And so the the third trade ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, and I want to know what happens next. And I can follow it monthly, I guess, but I don't want to do that. I want to read it all at once.
There's something to be said for the structure of trade paperbacks. Chris has asked me that, you know, with like East West and with Fables, you know, what's preferable? And I have to say, in a lot of cases, I would rather read a trade. And I used to be the month, I used to thrive on month-to-month comics, but, you know, it's easier. It's actually more convenient and more pleasurable to digest the stories that way.
Yeah.
I have found. Yeah.
Cool. So do either of you have something else to talk about?
I Totally Awesome Hulk.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
So I was trying to whisper to you over the mic while
I'm too drunk
talking.
To have gotten that. okay. I did enjoy the first two issues.
Third issue. Read the third issue of Totally Awesome Hulk, and I am thoroughly enjoying it.
It's fun.
And I think Amadeus Cho is the hero of the 21st century.
And is he the current Hulk?
He is the current Hulk. Okay. He was, a little backstory, Amadeus was, Hulk has always had a teen sidekick. Nearly always.
Everybody's got a team.
Yeah, everybody's got Rick Jones, and there was the fella in the '80s who had AIDS. I can't think of his name right now. It was a Peter David character.
Oh, yeah, I forget.
But frequently, maybe not always, but frequently the Hulk will have a companion, a sympathetic companion, maybe not necessarily a sidekick. Well, along comes Amadeus Cho, who is level 2 genius. And I don't really know what the whole backstory is, how he became the Hulk. Do you know?
They've been doing flashbacks, and it looked like the Hulk...
Because they haven't really directly told us. They're filling that in, right?
Little
they're
bits
backfilling
and
it for us.
And like, so. It looks like the Hulk was trying to prevent a disaster, and Amadeus Cho showed up and was like, hey, let me help you, bro.
Yeah.
And then he got Hulkness.
So right now, actually, there's an Amadeus Cho collection of reprints of all the... about all of his stories, the sort of like fill in, you know, significant key points. I'm looking at the shelf over there. And it's drawn actually by Frank Cho. And who's writing it?
Greg Pak.
Yeah. Okay. So we have like the super team on this book. Mm-hmm. We have Frank Cho, we have Greg Pak, who I've loved since the get-go. And it's a thoroughly charming book. It's beautifully illustrated. It's got big monsters and more than a modicum of charm. And Marvel's doing it right with this book, and I cannot recommend it enough.
It's like Hulk versus Pacific Rim.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
the setup is that there's all these old Marvel monsters or new ones
like
popping up.
Boom.
Yeah,
and all these old Kirby monsters that you know
he's got to keep them in line.
Yeah. You know? It's infinitely charming, and there's a pinch of pathos, and you're missing out.
Yeah,
this is going to be a book people are going to be talking about for a while.
Cool.
Now the thing that I've maintained reading because I've been horrible about reading comics lately, though, is of course the Transformers.
Wait, what? You
Transformers?
Yes. Oh.
But there's the
maybe sometimes we need a break.
I know. Seriously, I do. But Transformers: More Than Meets the Eyes by James Roberts is utterly fantastic. And the part of the story is that Megatron has decided to become an Autobot after millions of years of murdering and killing and all that. And he's trying to turn a new leaf. And the question is this the long con or is he actually trying to do it?
I would be suspicious.
Right? But there's a subplot that just showed up. Number 50, which is a big issue, came out. And there's a group called the Decepticon Justice Division. And they're the equivalent of the Nazi SS.
Isn't that a contradiction in terms?
Yeah. Well,
Verily, an oxymoron.
They hunt down and murder Decepticons that don't toe the line. And they will kill Autobots as well. But they're the worst serial killers that, you know, that the Decepticons ever hired. And so the thing is, their leader, their messiah, Megatron, has turned tail. And that's the hugest biggest sin that they could ever conceive. So in the stories right now, they've actually followed him and the group of Autobots he's hanging with, which includes like Ultra Magnus and Hot Rod and all these other characters, and they're basically going to murder the hell out of them. And and the thing is, Megatron is trying to deal with all of the death that he's responsible for, and he's actually legitimately like remorseful. So it's very interesting. Like for about like a year or two now, we've been dealing with a redemption arc that is consistent and about character development. And is there actually redemption for somebody who's responsible for the death of billions? So as far as like a comic that's driven by character development, a story about a bunch of robots is really awesome right now. So okay. I will say Transformers More Than Meets the Eye.
I was actually going to ask you, because I was looking at the Transformers right before we started rolling, and I want to get into that, but I don't know where to start because there are so many different titles.
What was the one that you loaned me?
Yeah, I will loan you. There's a introduction point to where this new writer took over. And it's basically, it's just such a character-driven series.
What was that book called?
It's a Treasury Size edition.
Yeah, it was the one you loaned me.
Yeah, I'm going to call it Treasury Size Transformers.
Okay. No.
You don't have to be too specific right now.
It was one of the buzz phrases. It was not More Than Meets the Eye. It was... It was entitled
R.I.D. Robots in Disguise.
Robots in Disguise. Well, this was a shared reprint that gave you both books.
Right. Okay,
it was quite good.
Yeah,
for someone who, you know, believe it or not, I did not grow up with the Transformers. I don't care, and you know, and Chris did me a good turn by saying, "Here, read this. It might change your life." And it didn't change my life, but I did like it very, very much.
I did grow up with Transformers, and we actually interviewed George Ball on this podcast, who writes for Robots in Disguise, I believe.
One of the Robots in Disguise.
One of the titles. Follow her on Twitter at AskMerity. I don't know why that's her Twitter handle, but it is. I follow it.
Good on you.
But you and I will talk about where I should start when I want to read Transformers. And so let's move on to quiz time.
But before
we do that, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. You can find everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, where we just released episode 4 of our latest episode called An Odd Duck, starring a bunch of Seattle fringe theater artists. And you can find that at thepaneljumper.com. You can also find everything that you want at Comics Dungeon, 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford. You're open. What are your daily hours? Actually, I've never asked you this. You're open every single day, right?
We're open every day.
Yes. Okay.
Even on Sundays.
Monday to Thursday.
Monday. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, like Monday, it's like noon to seven. Then Tuesday, it's 11 to seven. But then Wednesday through Friday, it's 11 to eight. And then Saturday, it's 10 to 8. And then Sunday, it's back to 12 to 7.
Okay, so
find out their hours
anytime.
At comicsdungeon.com. You can also go there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you're looking for a title, Chris Casso or Nicole Lamb will special order it for you. I have experienced this firsthand. Chris Casso is actually ordering me Mad Max Volume 2.
Cool,
because it's a title that I've started collecting. I found December number 6 here earlier because it was I was missing it apparently. I didn't even know that. All right, so gentlemen, let's go on to quiz time. This is the final thing we're doing today. Thank you very much. Before we do this, I just want to say I appreciated all of this. It was a lot of fun. Thank you. Cheers to you,
cheers.
Cole Hornaday.
Wait,
you probably finished a drink.
Me?
Cheers to you.
Are we clinking?
Clinky, 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 clinky.
Alrighty.
All right. Alcohol isn't the only drug of choice for comic book heroes and villains. As we've discovered, Tony Stark is a bit of an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a comic book character, and you have to tell me what substance they were addicted to.
Yeah.
I got this from thefix.com, so blame them if one of these are wrong. I'm just going to give you a character. You have to tell me what they were addicted to. All right. Number one, Batman.
Venom.
Chris Casso.
I had my hand up.
Cole had his hand
up. I had my hand up.
Yes. All right. Yes. Number two, Arsenal.
Heroin.
Yes, sir. Number three, Patriot.
Which Patriot? Yeah, which Patriot?
I have no idea, honestly.
Well, if it's the Image Patriot, it's...
Blue.
Yeah.
Good. The answer that the fix gave me was human growth hormone, or HGH.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right, which Patriot was that?
That's the Captain America...
U.S. agent?
The Remember the Truth by Kyle Baker?
Oh my goodness. The African American Captain America.
But the grandson.
Oh, the story that could have been so much better than it was.
All right. Yeah. Moving on, number four, Martian Manhunter.
Oreo cookies.
Chris, go ahead.
Sorry.
He can kill everyone on the planet, but he doesn't. He's nice like that. What is he addicted to?
Oreo cookies.
It's like Chacos.
Yeah, but they're Oreo cookies.
And finally, number five, Our Man.
Miracle Pills.
Yeah. Yes, sir. That is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Clinkies.
Clinkies.